This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Well, hello, beautiful.
Holy caffeine!
It's the world's greatest super friends.
Ronnie and Aaron.
Faster than a streak of lightning.
A DC Comics podcast.
Absolute.
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah, sure, why not?
I'm Batman. I'm Batman.
Batman.
He's a hipster.
The Flash, world's fastest human.
I mean, I grew up with Wally West.
Think about the future.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
Dude, you're a dumbass.
You are foolish.
Ooh.
DC Absolute.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. It's just like, it doesn't make sense.
Fuck this shit.
Yeah. He's busy watching Batman Ninja.
God, I hope.
I still haven't watched that. I gotta see that.
Oh, it's so good.
It's not good.
I know. I listened to your ADC. I'm not convinced that it's not good.
No, because Ronnie's wrong. It is fantastic.
So what are we going to talk about? Some comics?
I don't know. We could talk...
Jay's never been on here before. And Jay reads DC stuff.
Yeah, not as much as you guys. But and I'm kind of behind on some couple titles. But
we never had him on here before?
I thought I'd been on here before, but I don't know.
I thought he had too.
That was an episode of I Am Gotham.
No, but no. I wasn't on I Am Gotham.
You were too.
We did.
We reviewed the Harley Quinn animated thing.
Yeah. We didn't put that out ourselves?
Uh-uh.
Or what did we do, Batman versus Two-Face? We did a review on that.
Was that awesome? Okay. Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that we haven't all been on a call before. I'm just saying on Absolute DC.
Well, I thought I had.
Yeah,
I'm glad to have.
Apparently, we don't like you, so you've never been on.
That's fine. The list of people who don't like me is pretty long. So.
Well, that's not true for me, because we have brunch together all the time and record Wimey.
The brunch that never has any food.
Well, this is a podcast that never has any DC talk, so.
It
does. I'm
so listening. Much DC talk this morning.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah, but you're in for a love fest in this week's episode, Jay.
Okay, yeah, I can imagine. Because you guys are so similar.
All the books.
Actually, this week kind of shocked me. I thought I might have to take some nitro pills afterwards to stop the heart attack coming on.
All right, well, I look forward to it. So, wow, gosh, if I'd have known I was going to have my ADC cherry popped, I would have prepared better for it. So.
Oh, we don't prepare people. Yeah. We just put pills in their pudding.
So you say you're going in dry, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much. That's okay. One approach, or we do the Bill Cosby and you just don't know what's going to happen.
All right, well, either way, it's fine.
See, I got no idea.
No, so are we going to do an intro or no?
Do we ever do an intro?
Well, no, but it's just you and I, though.
Did we do an intro when we had Daryl on or Martin? I don't remember.
I don't know. Yeah, because we gave Daryl like that P.T. Barnum like introduction. You did, because you were like, he's the godfather of the Taylor Network, and then like six other things that were nonsense.
Yeah. Martin got mad.
Well, so he's got some credentials. I've got nothing, so there's not much you can...
You're the host of the Best of the Rest.
Co-host, yeah, one of them, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, maybe we could talk about non-DC books on this one.
Okay. Doesn't matter to me. I'm up for anything, whatever the hell you guys want to do.
That's it. This is the Absolute Catalyst Prime podcast.
Yes. I can talk some Catalyst Prime.
Which books came out today? Was it Astonisher and Excel?
My answer is the ones that I'm behind on.
Yeah, I got to read those.
See, I'm behind on everything. I stopped buying the individual books for cost effectiveness, so I'm just waiting for trades to come out now. So
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a couple weeks ago, I realized I was way behind on most of them. So I did like a huge catch up. And then I just realized today I've never read a single issue of Kino.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I have 5 issues of Kino. And then I'm like, oh, I have issues 1 to 5 of Kino that I've never read. So I got to do that.
Well, it was pretty easy at first, but then I just kept adding books. And now they're up to 7 titles, I think, or
something
8.
Like that, yeah.
So it's really, we're trying to read all your other stuff and to keep up with that. It got to where I was getting behind anyway. So I just decided, well, screw this. I'm not going to keep buying the individual issues. I'll just wait till trades come out.
My plan today was to try and catch up on some of the New Age of Heroes books after Ronnie and I recorded this morning, and then Cobra Kai got in the way.
You know what my favorite thing about Catalyst Prime is? Martin thinks that's the name of the comic publisher.
Doesn't?
Because like every time he talks about it, he's like, you know, Catalyst Prime had a couple of books in there. And that line forge. So it like, I laugh hysterically every time he says it.
Well, he's not 100% wrong. It's not a publisher, but it is an imprint.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny that Lion Forge has the Catalyst Prime stuff, and then it's like kids' books.
Yeah.
I was over at their booth at New York Comic Con, there was like insane amounts of little kid books, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And I'm like, where's all the Catalyst Prime stuff? And it was like tucked over on the side.
They also have a European imprint.
Yeah,
too,
Magnetic,
right?
Magnetic Collection. That's where they published Jazz Maynard.
Okay.
And they just, in fact, today the last issue of Ghost Money came out, which was a damn good series.
Wait, Jazz Maynard is Lion Forge?
Yeah, it's part of their like another one of their imprints, Magnetic Collection.
Shit, I had no idea. I haven't read that one yet.
That hardcover needs to go into your in-stock trade's birthday.
That's a sweet hardcover.
Yeah.
Wait, Jazz Maynard?
Yeah, because it's oversized and the corners are rounded. So, you know, Gary can't hop on your desk and knock it off and bend the corner.
But, yeah, Lion Forge has essentially 4 imprints that they print under right now. Cub House and Roar, which are the kids' books. That's the kids' stuff. Then Catalyst Prime, and then Magnetic Collection, which is mostly, so far, been licensed European books from that were published in Europe 2, 3, or more years ago. Aberrato was the first one they did. And then Ghost Money, which is a French comic from a few years ago. And then Jazz Maynard, which was Spanish. Spanish comic.
Interesting. Because I picked up Aberrato thinking it was a Catalyst Prime book. And I read the first issue and I'm like, what the hell does this, how does this fit in with everything else? And I was like, all right, maybe it'll make more sense in issue 2.
No, you're going to spend a lot of time. No, you're going to spend a lot of time trying to tie that into.
Yeah. Yeah, because it came out right around when the Catalyst Prime stuff was starting.
Right.
I was like, oh, Lion Forge. I got to get this. I was like, oh, my goodness.
I'm trying to think of another title that they're doing, but it's not necessarily a kid's title. Infinity 8. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No. I know the other one they put out was like Claudia and Rex or something.
Yeah.
I think so. I'm not, you know.
I remember seeing that it was another Lion Forge thing and thinking to myself, oh, I need to get this. And then I was reading the description. I'm like, this seems like a strange, like weird children's story. And I'm going to just stay away from it.
They put out Knight Rider there for a little bit.
Knight Rider, like Kit?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Did the book talk to you? Or did you just have to pretend?
It would be a lot cooler if it did, but it didn't.
Sure would.
Had a row of red LED lights that flash.
That's the Chase 1 in 500 cover.
Yeah. I keep hoping they would do that with like one of the Battlestar Galactica comics. Have an old style Cylon eye on the cover. Just have it go.
Don't they? Somebody's doing some of those old Battlestar Galactica.
It doesn't have the light.
Oh, doesn't. Okay. Oh, here.
That better be in the hardcover. That's all I got to say.
They'll probably talk about it on Dynamite today or Dynamite Central or Dynamite tomorrow or whatever it's called.
Okay.
Well, because that's Battlestar Galactica comes out from Dynamite, so.
Does it? Right. Yeah, it does.
There was one series that Dennis and I talked a little bit about, and we made fun of because it's BSG versus BSG, where the
old versus new.
No, old versus new, and apparently there is a scene in there where Starbuck pretty much does Starbuck. We used to make fun of that. Like, I don't want to read that. I don't want to see that. I don't anymore.
Huh.
Yeah. So.
Interesting.
Well,
stuff.
I brought that conversation to a
screeching halt.
Screeching halt.
I do want a non-biased person. I want to get into this. And Jay, you and I have talked about it online, but not like viably. And Aaron has fallen out of love with it as to where you've fallen into love with it, but like the Batman title itself.
Well, there's no way I'm non-biased. I don't think there's anybody who's non-biased, but.
Well, you weren't into the wars of Tom King shit. Tom King's the greatest, you know, that type of stuff. You pretty much sat on the sidelines and kept to yourself about it for the most part.
I'll say this. I'm still not saying that Tom King's the greatest.
Right. I know. But you are enjoying it now, though, right?
I am, yes.
So I know what Aaron's turning point was. Like, I know what a roundabout story arc issue was where he started falling off. What was yours for, like, where it started ramping up to from fair to good to, okay, it's pretty great now?
Well, it's, I wouldn't put it in those terms as far as I thought. What I'm saying is I don't think that I look at it and say, well, the first 10 issues sucked and then it got better after that. I think for me was that as I kept reading it and rereading, so I started to understand what he's doing more. I started getting a kind of a comprehension of the, I think, where he's going with this, or at least trying to. When I started trying to understand it and it didn't just seem disjointed, then I started like, okay, yeah, I'm liking this. I'm liking where it's going. So okay. That's probably the best explanation.
Okay. That's cool. I was just, I didn't mean to like lawyer you and put words in your mouth and like lead the witness or whatever.
I didn't. That's why, but you know, the first arc, I Am Gotham.
Yeah.
I read that. I'm like, I'm not sure what they're trying to do here. And I didn't care for that. Character names Gotham and Gotham Girl. I thought those were a little bit, sounded a little trite.
Right.
But I liked what, you know, kind of what was going on there. And then, you know, I think the next one was I Am Suicide.
Yeah. And then I Am Bane.
Really, really, that's where I was like, I'm not sure what the hell what's going on here. You know, a suicidal Batman. And then we started getting into I Am Bane. And then the pieces started falling together for me. And I was like, okay, King is looking at a kind of a deeper, he's trying to go into a deeper psychological examination of Bruce Wayne, you know, from the childhood up to now, kind of what has molded him. And he's getting to a point in his life where he's really starting to question everything.
Right.
It's like, what have I done? Have I made the right decisions? And should I keep going with this? And I don't know. And I understand why people that are not liking this, why they're not, because it is exceedingly different than anything that's come before, but I'm kind of enjoying this new way of looking at it. So,
but this is the thing with that way of thinking, you know, like how Batman's examining everything and whatever. That's pretty much the same thing that's been going on in Detective Comics in a way.
I agree,
but I think that in Detective Comics, it's been done in a way that feels more like Batman, if that makes any sense.
It does. I can see your argument for that.
You know, so it's really, I mean, it is different what Tom King is doing. And for me, I liked the first couple, you know, the first couple arcs a lot. And then as probably during the Bane stuff, I guess, is where I started to lose interest. And then it kept going down from there. But, you know, at the same time, Detective Comics, where it's starting to explore, you know, why Batman does what he does, you know, and how he feels about everything, especially when, you know, Tim supposedly died
Right.
And he basically turned that into, okay, no one makes mistakes anymore. Like, we are going to do everything perfect and we're going to, you know, whatever. I don't know. Like, there, it just feels, it feels more like the character I know than, you know, moping and, you know, getting engaged and hanging out and being like, let's have a wedding. it's not Batman.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing. And as much as I, as we all do, try to, you know, BS and talk trash on the Discord channel, I'm not going to sit here and say anybody's opinion is wrong. If you don't like what Tom King's doing, that's fine. That doesn't make you wrong. It doesn't make me right.
Damn, well, Ronnie, he's telling you your opinion's wrong.
I'm going to tell Aaron that he's wrong all the damn time. So.
Well, that's
you've listened to this show. That's pretty much all we do.
But, you know, I think you're correct in what you're saying, that, yes, Tom King is really pushing this character out beyond what you've ever seen him do before.
Right.
And, you know, doing things like, yeah, right, getting engaged. Oh, my. Well, although Bruce Wayne has had fiancés in the past, but they've all been sort of very ancillary, not part of the story. And you never felt that he was actually very serious about anything. They're just. So
it was that nightcap, that rooftop. That's what sealed the deal. He was like, "Oh yeah, it's time. I better put a ring on it." All right. So to keep it Batman related.
Well, hold. I have one question before we move off of the Batman marriage thing.
Okay.
Jay, in your opinion, I'm assuming that the wedding is not going to actually happen. That's just me guessing after, you know, not reading the past 10, 12 issues of Batman. If it does or doesn't happen, what do you think is going to be the end result of Catwoman in the comics in the future? Like, do you think that her character is never going to quite be the same because there's always going to be that relationship stuff? Or do you think, you know, they'll go back to, you know, playing cat and bat, for lack of a better term?
Well, see, that's a good question, because I don't know. I'm assuming at this point that the wedding is going to go ahead. Now, I don't necessarily think the marriage is going to go very well. I think it's going to, but I don't know how they could have the same kind of relationship when she's actually now living in Wayne Manor. You know, you can't have that kind of confrontational thing when you're both sitting at the same table at dinner or something,
right?
And I don't know. We'll see. Now, Joelle Jones has got the new Catwoman book that'll be starting in July,
right
after
the wedding issue,
Batman 50. So I have no idea what she's planned with that.
Now, is that a full ongoing or is that just a mini?
It's an ongoing. I think. Okay. And she's doing both the story and the art, which is impressive. I'm trying to bring it up because I was just reading, because Dennis and I did our previews episode, and I was reading about that. I'm trying to think of what.
Well, Jay is
here's
the Rest podcast on the Nerdy Legion.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, here's what they're saying about it, the write-up. Right. The wedding night's barely over, but Catwoman's back on the streets, this time to expose a copycat who's pulling heists around Gotham City. As Selina cracks the whip on her former criminal cohorts, she's attracting unwanted attention from one of Gotham's most dangerous groups. The mob? Nope. Try the GCPD. And as if the Bat Bride didn't have enough problems, don't miss the debut of an all-new villain determined to make trouble for all nine of Selina's lives. So.
Oh, man, I hope that villain is called the Maid of Honor.
That would be class.
So, did you read DC Nation?
I haven't yet, no.
Okay. Because I was curious what you thought about the Joker story in that.
But I haven't read it, so I can't tell you. But, I mean, it'll come out when we do the previews episode. But Dennis went on a bit of a rant. And I said, well, I'm not going to comment. I'll let the ADC guys talk about it. And he was wondering, it's like, okay, how are these people connecting the wedding of Bruce and Selina with Batman and Catwoman? How are they knowing about these together? And I'm like, well, I refused to say anything. I just said, well, you'll have to wait and see. And
but it's not known that it's Bruce and Selina for everyone, right? Because it's just being billed as Batman and Catwoman.
Well, that's true.
As to where, you know...
You know, it's not like they're going to show up at social functions as a couple when they're married in real life.
Right.
Well, I mean, Bruce hardly shows up to social functions anyways. But not everybody knows that Selina's Catwoman, though, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's just like not being able to see that Superman's Clark Kent just because he has glasses on. So, I mean, come on.
Wait a minute, Ronnie. You're going to tell me that Superman is Clark Kent? How have they been in the same place together? Remember those comics where there was the Clark Kent and Superman? And you're like, wow, this is going to be a great story. I can't wait to see how they do it. And it turned out to be garbage.
Yeah, because it was Mr. Mitzilplick or whatever his name is.
Garbage.
Mixless. Oh, God, I'd have to pronounce you down.
How can you trick him to say his name three times if nobody can say it?
Backwards.
Mixless, I think is how it's pronounced.
Mr. M for me.
If it's not Gilbert Gottfried, it's not a character.
Martin says it Mixleplick, and that's not right. That is incorrect. That is not how it's pronounced.
So. That's how I say it, too, so I'm wrong, too.
But now, Aaron, you don't watch Doctor Who, do you?
I do watch Doctor Who.
Okay. All right. Did you see, remember in the, it was a Christmas special, the return of Dr. Mysterio? Little kid swallowed that crystal and got superpowers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember there was one funny scene in there where Doctor Who's looking through a Superman magazine? And he shows a kid and goes, nobody has seen this. The Superman and Clark Kent are totally the same person. And he'd actually taken a pencil and drawn a pair of glasses on Superman in the comic book to show this little kid. And the kid was like looking at him like, everybody in the universe knows this, but you.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
I don't know what it's going to be like. It's really interesting.
See, you know, and that's the thing that I think is interesting, because it opens more doors and more storytelling, is whether if they do get married, then you have all these things, like new things even, that will come out of that. If they don't get married, then you're going to have hell of a repercussions from that. So
but,
different stories will come from that.
But if they do get married and then they divorce or get separated or whatever, or they don't get married, you can't have Catwoman anymore.
Why?
It's never going to be the same, you know, Batman and Catwoman, not necessarily fighting each other, but her character, like the whole relationship between the two of them as a good and, you know, sort of bad guy.
The flirting
goes right out the window.
I don't know.
You know, like that. Exactly. Like the way that they talk to each other and everything else. I mean, say they get married and divorced. Are they really going to have that relationship again?
Well, I don't think they will have that for a while. But if they get married and divorced, you're going to have a pissed off, scorned cat.
Unless she's the one that's breaking it off. And then you have a void of emotion Batman.
I mean, let's think about this honestly. We have hashtag woman logic. So it's always going to be Batman's fault.
Well, and another thing is, I'm not sure... They addressed this a little bit, but this, and I thought, I didn't care for the way they ended it, but the whole thing, I'm not sure Talia al Ghul is finished with this either.
Well, I assume she's going to be one that crashes it as well, along with, you know, Joker and everybody else that finds out about it.
Because they had that two episode arc, what was it called, Rules of Engagement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they go to whatever the name of that country is, and then... Selina and Talia have this sword fight throughout most of an issue.
Yeah, it was so good, huh?
And then it ends with Talia going up to Bruce and saying, oh, I like her. This is your beloved. I like her. I'm like, that didn't ring true at all to me. I mean, unless she's lying and just, and, you know, kind of laying in wait to another opportunity. So.
There was one good part of that issue, and it was Damian and Dick sitting outside talking.
Yeah, that was the strong part of that issue, I thought, as well.
Yeah, but it's Talia being the cerebral assassin that she always is, though. Because I think she's playing mind games, too. Because we all know that she could have won that sword fight, hands down.
Yeah, should be able to, with all of her
training.
But I liked it too, because I like the Dick Grayson Damian relationship. I think it's really cool. Because in some ways, Dick is more of a dad to Damian than Bruce is.
Yeah.
Because Bruce has always had that emotional stunning from his childhood. And in fact, if you go back to Batman Incorporated, right before Damian was killed by his clone future self, there was a conversation where he and Dick were talking, and Damian tells him, said, "You are my favorite partner I've ever worked with." So even over his father, he preferred working with Dick. And they were damn good. And that Batman and Robin series Grant Morrison wrote was...
Yeah, out of all of the things that DC tries to bring back or revisit and stuff, I wish that they would give, another... I mean, totally out of continuity, I'm fine with that. But I'd love to see a 6-issue story where it goes back to the two of them together.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was some of the best writing. Now, Ronnie won't agree because he abhors anything Grant Morrison ever wrote.
Well, that's not true. I like some Grant Morrison stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, that's some of the last stuff that I really enjoyed that he did.
I haven't read much of what he's done recently other than...
I don't know. It's all the multiversity stuff and everything else, and that's where it loses me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conceptually, I enjoy it, but in practice, I'm just I just don't care.
So, Jay, who's your Batman villain? Who's your go-to Batman villain?
I know who it is.
Hell yeah.
No, it's not Cotton. I don't know if I have one.
Who's an obscure Batman villain that you like?
Well, I don't know if you'd call him obscure, but he's been certainly underutilized.
Okay.
At least since the Morrison days, and that's Professor Pig.
Oh yes.
Professor Pig was an absolutely brilliant creation. Absolutely brilliant. And I would have liked to see more done with him.
I think I enjoyed the use of him on Gotham.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was done pretty well.
Yeah. I agree.
I agree. Yeah, with that. So Professor Pig is an obscure one. The Joker, I mean, how can you not say the Joker is one of your great villains, but you can't use him very much or he gets over.
Yeah. He gets oversaturated. Yeah. Kind of like Sinestro in Green Lantern world.
So once about every 2 to 3 years, you bring him in for an arc, I think is about the most you can use him without it becoming.
Now this will go for both of you, but which Joker do you like the best? Like the crazy sadistic type one or
I like the tattooed gangster one.
Well, I'm not
the Leto gangster.
Here we go again. Didn't we go down this rabbit hole earlier?
Yeah. No,
I'm not really go ahead.
No.
I don't know if I've seen all the Jokers yet. I mean, I know Jeff Johns is working on that story, but have we really seen enough?
Well, I mean, have we really seen enough of the era? We had the Silver Age Joker, and then we had, the Gold Age Joker, and then now we have the whatever Copper Age, I guess, the modern
For
age.
For me, when I like the Joker the most, it's not the silly Joker, and it's not the totally, evil, twisted guy. It's the completely insane, you have no idea what he's going to do, Joker, you haven't read it yet, Jay, but Ronnie and I were talking about the story in the DC Nation book, and the Joker in that story is perfect for me. He's he's out there, he is unpredictable, but it's not over the top, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's that type of Joker is my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, it's if you're talking about it in the whole 78 year history of him, the Golden Age Joker started out, he was very dark, murderous character. But then you get 1954, 1955, and that damn comics code comes into play and just, emasculates all the dark stuff you can do. And so the Silver Age Joker became really ridiculous, and that's where you got stupid stories like Joker's utility belt, a whole issue where Joker gets a utility belt like Batman.
Yeah.
Or the Batman's greatest boner. You know the whole issue where there's a whole issue where
that's what the Joker does.
Or Joker sets up this whole series of making Batman commit all these boners.
Oh, that kind of boner.
Yeah.
Come on, Ronnie.
We're talking about boner and like the concept.
Get your head out of the garbage.
Yeah, see, Joker does something stupid, really kind of makes a dumb mistake, and they print it in the newspaper. The Joker commits this great boner, and so he sets out to make Batman look bad by engineering all these situations where Batman's going to make these stupid mistakes. So you get really stuff like that was just, you know, not good at all. But they were saddled by what they could do because, you know, with that comics code, bad guys could never win. You couldn't show, you know, anything ever bad happening to policemen. You couldn't show murder very much. You could, so the Silver Age Joker got kind of silly in a lot of ways. And he kind of disappeared for a lot of years. I didn't use him very much because I don't think you could have used him. So then, you know, the Joker around the time of Death in the Family was, I thought, pretty well done. I don't know. You know, the Joker, as Snyder did him in Death of the Family, that wasn't my favorite arc by any means.
That's the tattooed one that Aaron was talking about.
No, that was the cut off his face and staple.
Yeah, where the doll maker cut off his face. Which I never really got a good explanation as to why that happened.
Yeah, I don't know. It just did. It was so that they could really have crazy Joker masks sold, I guess.
I guess so. But that, like I said, that was one of the things that never was explained. So.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I don't like the straight-up horror Joker. I don't mind when he goes a little crazy and, you know, maybe kills a Robin. But, you know, like I said, the whacked out, unpredictable, give me that story any day, and I'm good.
Yeah. No, I'm agree. I like to see the Joker wild ass, but anyway, so that's sort of a long, twisted answer to your question about
what about the go-to Batman. Obscure one, Aaron?
Oh, jeez. I don't even know.
The Eraser?
No. I don't know. Because honestly, that's a tough one.
See, for me, I think, I don't know about obscure, but like Jay said, I'm going to use Jay's caveat as underutilized, and I'm going to go with Mad Hatter.
I could see that.
I think a modern-esque take on the Mad Hatter would be pretty awesome.
I could be.
I could see that.
I'm just not very good at picking out one of anything.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
It's like, you know, who's my favorite such and such? Well, I don't really know.
Yeah, I know. You love lists.
No.
You love lists about as much as I love online petitions. So,
like, I don't know if he'd really be an obscure Batman villain, but, I mean, give me an Owlman story, and I'm very okay.
All right.
Owlman.
You know, I mean, for me, anything Earth 3, I'm okay with. It's all good.
Interesting.
Hush. All right, you got to put Hush in there. Hush was a great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Villain.
Yeah, that's true.
But again, I wouldn't call him obscure. Haven't seen him. I haven't used him in a lot of years. But
yeah, and I think with him, you really can't either, right?
No, that's true.
So, Aaron, I know Jay has. So I'm going to ask you because I can't remember. White Knight. Have you read it?
No, not yet. The final issue just came out, right?
Today. Yeah. Or yesterday. Yeah, today.
Yeah. I was going to wait until 4 issues came out to read it, and then I'd wait for the final 4. But then I didn't have time, and then it was 6 issues, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to wait for all 8. So I have them all, and I am going to read them. They're high on my list.
Okay. Because my question was going to be to both of you, and my answer is going to be yes. But do you think this story will be looked at down the road? Will it have staying power? Like right now, it's one of the hottest stories out there, right? But like 10, 20 years down the road, do you still think it'll be like one of the greats, like Killing Joke or Long Halloween or Hush or something like that?
I don't know if it'll be looked at as highly as those, simply because...
Well, I wasn't trying to compare it to those. I was just...
No, well, I know. I was just... But I was not doing it as a comparison, but there's so many more stories that they're being told right now. It's like, you know, you've got Batman and Detective Comics and White Knight, and then you have the Dark Metal stuff.
And Sins of the Father.
I haven't Creature even started Night, that yet. And Batman Creature of the Night, which is, if you haven't, I don't know if you've been keeping up with that.
Creature of the Night is awesome,
Damn good story. And then the one that came out, the hardcover, the second one's going to be coming out pretty soon. I forgot what.
The Dark Prince Charming?
The Dark Prince Charm. I think because of just the volume of stories, it's harder for one thing to kind of rise to the top. So I don't know if it'll be looked at in those veins, but I think it's going to be a well-regarded story, as much as any of the out-of-continuity stories are.
Okay.
But I have always said, and I still do, probably half, or if not more, of my all-time favorite Batman stories are either Elseworld or out-of-continuity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Dark Allegiances, my gosh. The Cult.
Yeah. Yep, that's a good
one. A great story. I'm trying to think of some.
Speeding Bullets.
Speeding Bullet. I'm trying. There's one. I cannot think of it. It's just, it'll come to me. But the stuff that Darwin Cook did, Ego and other. Jeff Johns' Earth One stuff, which I don't know if you consider that out of continuity, but it's.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Gotham by Gaslight.
And I think part of what makes those stories so meaningful for me is that because they are out of continuity or Elseworlds, they are free to experiment in ways that you can't do
right
a lot with the continuity titles. Right. Although Tom King sure is pushing things, but
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, because like another question that came to me is most writers, when they get a hold of somebody, like for Marvel, now it's Dan Slott, right, in Spider-Man. And so he's off of Spider-Man, or going to be off of Spider-Man, and then he'll move on to a different title. But he's been on that book for so long, but when he's done, is there going to be repercussions? Like with Tom and Batman and Catwoman, right? Tom says that he wants to do Batman for 100 issues, and then he's done with it and all that. And I understand that you have to put the toys back in the toy box, but there's got to be some dust or dirt or something on them still, right?
Yeah, I mean, the way it seems is every time a new writer takes over, you know, like a property of their own, they always have to put their own stamp on it.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, like with Bendis and Superman, he's basically saying, I don't care how much everybody likes what's going on right now. That's all gone. And here's now the Superman. You know, so, I mean, I'm assuming whoever comes after Tom King will end up doing the same thing with Batman. And maybe the whole Catwoman future relationship becomes moot.
And that's fine. And I don't have a problem with writers doing what they need to do or want to do. I've got, you know, I have no problem, no heartburn at all with Bendis, in theory, taking over Superman. What's gotten me annoyed about that was I was listening... There's another podcast, I'm trying to think of what it's called, where they recorded the roundtable or the panel that Bendis did at C2E2.
Okay.
And they were talking about Superman, and the moderators were commenting, and people are asking these questions. And they didn't come out and say it in these words, but everybody has this general idea of like, yes, you know, Bendis is also, you know, now Superman's going to be great again. Or, you know, we're now, this is going to be the Superman that we've all been wanting. And I'm like, where is that thinking coming from?
Yeah.
Because everybody that I know of that's reading Superman now is liking it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, since Rebirth, everybody has, you know, that I've known, literally everybody I've talked to that read Superman regularly from Rebirth liked what was going on in Action or Superman or both.
Yeah.
So this whole, I couldn't understand where this whole idea of, you know, oh, wow, this is going to be, you know, we're refreshing Superman now and this is going to be great. Other than it's just corporate doublespeak to try to generate hype and interest in something. And, you know, and Bendis has got this name that everybody seems to almost deify.
Yep.
So I don't know. That's
And for me, how, I mean, just say I was a writer and I'm writing Superman and, you know, it's well received. Everyone's liking it. And then all of a sudden Bendis becomes available and they're like, oh, we're going to hire him. You pick any book you want to write. And he goes, oh, I want to write Superman. And then all of a sudden, all of the Bendis's coming ads come out and they start saying, you know, Superman's going to be great again. And this, and all the while I'm sitting here writing Superman thinking to myself, well, damn, why have I just wasted 2 years of my life writing this comic?
There's a lot. I don't know why people like Dan Jurgens just didn't give DC a big fuck you kind of.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, look, I have not been a huge fan of Superman for my entire life. I mean, bits and pieces I've always enjoyed, but this is the first run that I've liked in ages. And now they're telling me that I'm not supposed to like this, that Bendis is going to make Superman great. And that's what I'm supposed to like. Where the two Superman stories that I've read that he's written have been terrible. So, whatever.
Well, I don't know. It's like, and I'm probably going to step on somebody's toes here. Not necessarily you two, but somebody listening.
That's what we do on this podcast,
Jay. It's kind of the way with Snyder. Snyder had such a well-received run on Batman that it's almost like he can do... You know, they're just letting him do whatever he wants to now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least now they're kind of putting it out of continuity.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
I mean, the metal stuff isn't really tying in with anything other than New Age of Heroes, right?
The No Justice.
Yeah, but that's following up on the metal. And I think that there's still a Justice League, you know? So it's kind of metal seems like it's now an imprint of, of DC Comics.
Yeah. True. I can see that.
But I mean, I was like, I don't dislike Snyder, and I'm not, but it's, I don't like it. I think it's sets a bad precedent when you start giving one particular creator freedom. Now I say that,
and you love Morrison's run.
Well, I love, but I mean, they didn't give Morrison carte blanche on everything. Now somebody's going to jump in and say, oh, well, what about Kent at Valiant? Well, okay, yeah, Kent did. Kent writes great stuff. I love. So I don't know if you would say he's been given too much to do at Valiant.
It's not the same thing with Snyder or whatever, where they bring in Matt Kent and say, you know what, do whatever you want. And he goes, oh, okay. Ninjak is now a ballerina and, you know, Faith is a trucker. And this is the story I'm going to tell of the two of them driving across country, saving cats and trees.
I might read Faith then.
Okay, I would read that book. I would read that book. Yeah.
You know, like he comes in and they're like, well, what do you want to do? And he goes, well, I have this idea for Divinity. You know, oh, I'm interested. Maybe I would have fun writing, you know, Exo Manowar. But it's still the same character. It still feels like the character. It's not. Oh, well, let's see what happens if I put a giant mountain in the middle of Gotham and now there's all these evil versions of everybody and that's just what it's going to be now. You know, like I don't really see it as the same thing. But like I said, I'm, you know, the metal stuff seems like it's all out of continuity. And I mean, I guess DC likes Snyder, so they're going to let him do whatever just to keep him. But
yeah, I think so.
You know, I mean, I think, I don't know, over the past couple of years, I like Snyder as a whole, but the last batch of stuff, like I'm losing interest. You know, there's nothing that really draws me into the stories anymore. So.
Well, like I said, it's been sort of a downward as far as things I liked. He wrote what I consider two of the best Batman arcs stories ever. The Black Mirror, which was the last 10 issues of Detective Comics before they started New 52.
Before New 52.
And The Court of Owls.
Yeah.
Those two stories are two of the greatest Batman stories ever told, in my opinion. So I give him credit for that. But like I say, after that, it just started getting gradually, I enjoyed them less and less.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
But I hear that Kent's going to do something really crazy with Ninjak, that he's going to give Colin an American accent.
only on a web series?
Only on a web series, yes.
You know, I still have not brought myself to watch anything past the first episode.
I didn't either. I could not get past Colin talking like he's from Nebraska or someplace like that.
There's a lot of stuff I couldn't get past in the first episode. And no one wanted to answer my questions when I saw it at New York Comic Con. And I had a lot of the same questions that I had. And they just kind of brushed them off. And I was like, all right, well, no. Nah. No, thank you.
I don't want to get off on that. But yeah, there's a couple things. But that was the most.
It's what we do here.
It's like, this guy is British. He doesn't talk like this. That and Roku's CGI hair did not look good at all. I didn't think.
And explain to me how Livewire doesn't automatically sense like the nanite stuff and just know what's going on.
All good questions.
I asked at the booth, the Valiant booth. I go, so with Livewire, they go, well, it'll be explained. Okay. I don't think it was. I think they just didn't realize it.
Plot twist.
Yeah. Oh, well. And I guess it's related to DC Comics because it's a bat in the sun.
Oh, that's professionalism.
That's it.
This is the award-winning podcast that's never won any awards.
I thought we won a couple grabbies.
Nope.
No.
No. I
got to reach around and see C2E2. Does that count?
No.
Oh.
All right. That's a shame.
Say, well, BOTR, we haven't even been nominated, much less win anything.
We don't care here either. That's like we're going to be the longest reigning podcast with the most numbers that's never won an award.
Yeah, because we can add all the Rebirthically episodes onto this one.
Yep, and we'll just keep going and going and going, and then we'll be like, we don't have to beg for reviews or start nonsense or anything like that.
Well, I'm not one to brag on our stuff, but we've got our best episode coming up here in a few days.
Awesome.
And that's the interview we did with the creators of Spencer Unlock. That was a hell of a good interview.
Is that going to be out before this episode? Because this will probably come out next week.
Probably. This is Thursday as we record this. It'll probably be out Monday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
yes.
It'll definitely be.
So be sure to check out that episode of Best of the Rest, which is in the Nerdy Legion archives at this point.
Yep. Go to nerdylegion.com, Best of the Rest, new episode, boom, right there.
Now, I want to get it out a little bit earlier because I'm trying to coordinate things with Martin, because Martin wants to have them on Therapy Thursday. I think a Therapy Thursday issue.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I've been telling you guys this for a fucking year now. And then it's like, oh.
Well, yeah, you told us about this, but what you didn't tell us about was Ghost Fleet.
Oh. I still haven't read that. Huh.
Ghost Fleet sounds interesting. Can you tell me more?
And what's the other one that did?
Well, it's Dark Horse, not Vertigo.
Oh, yeah. Ice Cream Man. You kept your mouth shut about that. Didn't tell anybody about Ice Cream Man.
Yeah.
So.
Poachers.
You know what I think happens? I think there's so many fringe conversations happening at the same time throughout the day in that Discord chat.
Don't you give him an out.
That, I mean, everybody misses everything.
I will readily admit right now, I don't have the time. That's not true. I don't have the interest to go back. And if I've been gone for 3 hours or 4 hours doing other things, no, I don't have the wherewithal to go back and read everything that was said in Discord the previous 3 hours while I was away doing
it. I read everything. And then I will comment on stuff that happened like 7 hours previous. And then everybody's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, I was answering Jay's question from this morning.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I end up saying things that look stupid because I haven't read the previous chat. But that's okay.
No, it's cool. Ronnie just doesn't tell us about all these comics. Until somebody else mentions them, and Ronnie pretends to have told us about them weeks ago.
Yeah. And I'll say, well, I'm giving him our time because I knew about Ice Cream Man because Ronnie actually put in a request to talk to them at C2E2.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they sent out to everybody who apparently got press passes, press badges, Image and Dark Horse and who else? DC. sent out emails saying, you know, we've got these creators available for short Q&As.
Speaking of, you talked to Mags about Eternity Girl, which is,
yes.
That's in your archives now. So if right. you're reading Eternity Girl and you want to hear Jay talk to her about it, you can check that out on the Best of the Rest feed too.
Yes. That's at the end of that episode. It was the episode that where Dennis and I talked about C2E2, about yep. our experiences, and it's tagged onto the end.
Yep.
And by the way, I didn't mention this to anybody. The Nicole or whoever it was that sent out that
email
originally, she followed up with me saying, I haven't heard anything. Did you ever publish this Q&A? And I said yes, and I sent her the link to the podcast and told her it starts at the 1 hour 7 minute and 54 second mark or whatever it was. And she said, okay, thank you. So. I was impressed that they were at least following up on it. Yeah. I didn't figure they were rats patoot. There just was something. Mm. But it wasn't the best interview because
everybody was around.
But I'll say it was at the DC booth, which wasn't really a booth.
Yeah.
It was just sort of this big squared off area. They had a couple tables here and there.
Yeah, right.
And they didn't have a place for these interviews to happen. There was a couple of these director's chairs they had set up. And we're sitting in there, and people are walking by. There's another interview going on 4 feet away from me while I'm talking to her. So you hear that, and a noisy convention hall with thousands of people is not the best place to do something like that. But it worked out pretty well, as best I could. Anyway.
Well, Aaron, you want to wrap this one up?
Yeah, is that all we got?
I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of the Absolute DC Podcast. If you would like to get in touch with me directly on Twitter, you can at Aaron S. Bell.
They can touch you on Twitter?
I said they can get in touch directly.
To you. Goodness.
Oh, my God. I've talked to you way too much today.
And you can find me on Twitter at Rombar316.
And you can find our very special guest, Jay, on Twitter at?
At Jay Forgets.
And his show is on Twitter at?
At BOTR Comics.
That's Best of the Rest, another show on the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Yes. You can also tweet directly to this show at DC_Absolute. And thank you all for listening. And thank you, Jay, for joining us.
Thank you.
DC Absolute.
Hell yeah.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic.
Ooh. Nerdy Legion.
Nerdylegion.com. Totally confused. Shut up. I hate you. Forget it. Podcast over. Shut up. You're not my real dad.